Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The 490th edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use promo code SGPN to get 50% off your first month. Start making smarter bets today. We're also brought to you by Cut. Cut is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that is U.S.-based and available in 40 states. Go to cut.com, that's K-U-T-T.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. And finally, we're brought to you by the SGPN merch store, 15% off when you use promo code PLAYOFFS.
Hi-yo, DeGenerinos. Welcome to episode 490. Oh, we're getting so close to episode 500. I'll make sure we get you Gumby's address before then, because that's where the big 500th episode bash is going to happen. But for now, it's episode 490, and it's going out to, it's dedicated to the electrifying Raquel Pennington, the champion we all deserve, because we don't deserve good things.
That's what we deserve.
Because our DNA is an abomination, and we do not deserve good things because we're MMA fans. So we get the electrifying. That's her new nickname, the electrifying Raquel Pennington. Thank you for coming to the show. I'm the electrifying Jeff Chalks Fox, one of your hosts here. Some may call me the grumpy one of the duo, but we'll see if I can live up to that or not. I believe if someone thinks I'm grumpy, my personal life must be sneaking through into my professional on-air life. But nonetheless, we have an exciting jam-packed episode for you for episode 490. UFC 297 went down last night. Very interesting results. Very interesting people being champion of the UFC now. Very interesting results for our picks. It was interesting all around. And then our Discord, it was interesting as well. Once the parents left, people went crazy in the Discord. So I think we had some interlopers from the hockey channel, and there are a bunch of miscreants over there, and I think they stirred things up. But regardless, we'll talk about all of this. I won't talk about it alone. I'll bring in the man who made himself a buttload of money last night, thanks to all of the dogs that be barking. It was the one and only Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
Do you know who the ultimate star of the pay-per-view was? The ultimate star of the pay-per-view had to be Sal D'Amato. Sal D'Amato, oh, yes, again, showed up over and over and over again on this pay-per-view card.
Why did customs allow that man into my country is what I want to know.
I personally don't know very much about the judging decisions and how people wind up on different commissions and shit like that, but like it was, first of all, Sal D'Amato seemed like he was in on every single fight that did go to decision, which was like, oh great, perfect. Good thing Sal was here. And then secondly, it was weird because the Canadian commission, maybe it was Ontario. I don't know if you guys got your individual commissions up there, if it's all one,
yeah,
or
yeah, we
whatever
do
the hell it is.
I think we do Ontario, yeah.
But Ontario seemed to have a lot of noobs up there. There were some names I had never seen before. Of course, that's the best time to get their feet wet too, is at a giant UFC pay-per-view. So,
yeah, of course.
It was a weird one for judges' decisions. And this is going to be maybe a controversial opinion.
Ooh, here we go. Hashtag hot take.
Maybe I ought to keep to myself. I think all the right people won on every single fight. I know you're definitely going to debate me on one, maybe two.
I understand why that person won, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, so. I think everybody, the right people won on all of the fights. I'm prepared to defend them all as we slowly walk our way down this card. But yeah, no, I ultimately think the judges rendered some of the weirdest scorecards ever, and they still wound up coming out roses. So I'm not terribly worried about how bad they were, but the fights were kind of fun.
Yeah, judges' scorecards, DNA were abomination, some would say, right?
That was, yes.
That was said a lot, the abomination line. That went around a lot in the Discord last night. I saw that part.
It's a good one. Manel Cape, if nothing else, we owe him that, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, the Discord we were talking about is sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Discord. Gumby had a... Gumby the dad had to put his foot down and tell everyone to behave themselves, because I guess there was some chaos there last night. I stayed out of it because last time I got involved, it was weeks of being harassed, so I don't want to be involved again. We'll let Gumby be the bad cop here. So anyhow, it's fun in the Discord. Get in the Discord. People were hitting lots of fun. I know our friend Crunch, he was hitting a lot of fights to begin with. I was kind of in and out all night. I know he was hitting a whole lot of pluses. I don't know if did he end up being a
plus. I have no idea where everybody was at the end of the night. Some people seemed very happy, some people seemed very grumpy. I think the interesting thing was, because there were 8 underdogs, even if it felt like you were missing a lot of picks, you wound up doing pretty well, which, like, when we go down when we go down a recap, you know, I wound up 6-6, and still somehow, if I had bet $100 on every money line, would have been up. So that's a pretty wild time.
Yeah, it was. So there was, what was the line that Burr said? Burr had a good line in the Discord, and I'm like, oh, that should be the title of the episode. I can't remember what it was. So something how, like,
oh, it's something drunk about
people
alcohol
and
alcohol and losing bet slips.
Yes, losing bet slips are a bad mix or a toxic mix. So yeah. Oh, here's a really good headline on Reddit. Dana White shuts down woke leftist reporter. We should totally watch that video, Dan. It must be great.
I'm sure it is.
Shut down that woke crowd in Canada.
Did you? Not to change your topic off.
No, I definitely don't want to go down that route. Anyway.
Cause more fight. Are you mildly surprised that he, and maybe this is the perfect segue into actually talking about the fights, which we should actually do it.
We have to do that eventually.
We should do that. Did you see he's not interested in a second fight between Dreykus and Sean Strickland? He said immediately that he's moving on. Is that mildly surprising to you?
Not really, just because Strickland kind of seems like like what they call in wrestling, a transitional champion, getting the belt off one guy and onto another guy. Like, he doesn't really, he was what, a champ for a couple months. So sometimes this happens when a guy's only been champ a short amount of time and is not someone that they seem hell bent on keeping the belt on. Then they seem to move on. It was a close fight. So, and it was a fun fight. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did decide to run it back. But then again, I'm not shocked that Dana's fine with Dreykus moving on. He probably has Israel Adesanya lined up in his sights for the next fight anyhow at this point.
Yeah, I think he has Izzy lined up too. I said it before. I think of the people who could possibly headline UFC 300, we were looking at a pretty limited list there, and Izzy was one of them. And should whoever come out of this fight unscathed be ready to fight him, that works almost better than Alex Pereira versus Izzy, like I kind of originally predicted. So I do think he had Izzy on the mind. It's just sort of surprising because it seemed like during this fight week, for better or worse, Sean Strickland, to steal an old line, moved the needle a little bit. It seemed like he was becoming, and they seemed like they could use stars, right? Like I said before, like Sean O'Malley really seems to be like the one budding star that the UFC has right now. You know, Volkanovski's a good champ and has been around for a while. Makhachev is that. But like, I don't know. Do they get the casual fans super excited for a fight? Whereas like, seemed like Sean Strickland, I mean, he looked like Canada's adopted son this weekend. So,
Good for us. Hooray for us.
Yeah. So, at the end of the day, like, I think I was kind of surprised that they weren't at least keeping that, because he didn't even seem to leave that as a possibility. He's like, it's not something we're looking at right now. So just freshly removed from that, he must know Izzy's itching to come back.
Yeah. Strickland definitely has become a star. Like you hear, for better or worse, you hear about him constantly, whether you're fighting or not. It's, you know, constant. He's always getting interviewed and he's always, you know, on not mainstream, but he's on other programs that are outside of the MMA realm. So yeah, bit of a surprise, but maybe Dana White works in mysterious ways. Gumby, who knows what he has up his sleeve. So yeah, let's jump in. I was going to say, will DDP be ready for UFC 300? But we can talk about that when we actually talk about the fight, which will be very soon after I tell you about a sponsor, Gumby. What is Gumby going to put up on the screen? Which sponsor am I going to talk about? People watching YouTube are waiting with pay. There it is, Underdog Fantasy. Of course, our friends at Underdog Fantasy. I have an article due for Underdog Fantasy very, very shortly today about the NBA. Underdog Fantasy has a way to play alongside your favorite fantasy players all season long. NFL, NBA, NHL, college basketball, college football, when that's around, MMA. Do they have tennis? I think they have tennis, right?
They do, in fact, have tennis, which has been kicking around as well.
Are you a tennis fan, Gumby?
I am not. Nope, not even in the slightest. Okay.
you don't play nor watch?
Correct.
Tennis. Okay. Simply pick higher or lower on your favorite player's fantasy stats and cash in. You can win 100 times with some of the spicy plays on there. Do you have a spicy play or just a normal play for us, Gumby?
I'll take either. I could go spicy or normal, but one of the ones I looked at for my article on Underdog Fantasy, which you can check over there, is I got Yusuf Nurkic's higher than his rebounds tonight. They got him at 11.5. That's the projection, 11.5. He's had 15 in back-to-back games and is averaging 13.75 over the last four. So hop up on his ability to wax the glass right now.
One of my Phoenix Suns. So if Jeff gets this posted soon enough, you can make that play before the game starts at 8 Eastern or whatever it starts tonight. So you can watch along. You can make your picks, and maybe you can make a little cash over on Underdog's mobile app or website, underdogfantasy.com. And when you sign up with the promo code SGPN, Underdog will double your first deposit of up to $100. It's Underdog Fantasy promo code SGPN. All right.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
UFC 297 took place in the Scotiabank Arena, home of the Toronto Raptors, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Other things happen there too, probably. Maybe like lacrosse or something.
I was just going to say, it feels like you guys have lacrosse.
We do it. The Toronto Rock. I don't know if the Toronto Rock plays there or not. It may be a little too big for them. I'm not sure.
What's the name of the lacrosse team? The Toronto Rock?
It is Rock. It is. Okay. People were saying in the Discord, they're not going to come back to Toronto anytime soon just because Canadian men were losing last night. Well, they had 18,559 people in attendance.
They'll be there
soon. $8 million gate. So I think they will be coming back fairly soon. That's 8 million more than they make at the Apex, right? So, yeah. So that was last night a raucous crowd, I guess you would say. They got their spirits dampened pretty quick here, at least when a Canadian male was in the cage, or even an adopted Canadian male. Let's go off to the top. And I guess Sean Strickland, according to Gumby, was a Canadian, at least for last week. I don't think he would like our laws and our liberal attitudes up here. So I'm sure he's back in the States by now. He got beat up by Dreykus Duplessis. I got to give put some respect on the champ's name. But the champ didn't leave unscathed by any means either. Split decision. 48-47, 48-47, 48-47. I had Duplessis winning 3-2. Strickland won the fifth. I can't remember what
in the first round. So definitely the first.
He won the first and the fifth.
That's what I had.
All right. There you go. I agree with Gumby then. I knew I gave him 2 rounds. But split decision is not the worst decision in the world either. It was a close fight. But DDP was doing more damage, even though his eye got totally shut. In the fight, we had DDP at +110. It was a big night for dogs. I hit 3, which is crazy for me. Gumby hit 4. So we'll get to our underdogs at the very, very end when I have a recap. But yeah, big night for dogs, and we ended things off with a big win. DDP, thoughts on the fight, thoughts on DDP, and is that eye of his going to be okay to fight at UFC 300 in what, 3 months from now?
I think so. I think he probably the good news for him is it wasn't like a big, and this is the story of the fight too, and if you want to go back and listen to Thursday's episode, this is literally what I said. It was not a big like blow. It was like cumulative blows that did that damage to his eye. So I don't think he's got like any damage to his eye socket or anything like that, you know, especially because it was showing up in the first or second round, which is when, you know, Strickland was just, you know, kind of sticking it out there every 4 seconds and landing a lot, you know, like if you want to look at the raw numbers, obviously the significant strikes advantage there is for Strickland, but I predicted on Thursday, look, Strickland is going to land more than DDP does. And if this goes to a decision, it isn't going to matter. It's going to look just like, and I went back to Jared Cannonier versus Sean Strickland. The punches people are going to remember from those rounds all belong to DDP. And at the end of the day, that's what the judges care about. The punches that you remember, the punches that seem to have done damage. And it even reads that way in the criteria too, right? Like if you read the criteria, it says effective striking. And it defines effective striking by strikes that are either singular or cumulative that make damage in terms of trying to end the fight. And really, like, at the end of the day, the deal breaker is if you say, well, Strickland landed 15 of them and the soft 15 of them is the exact same thing as 3 hard ones from DDP or 5 hard ones or 10 hard ones. They say the ones that are the singularly most impactful should be given criteria or should be given preference. So if it was a tie, the one who landed the least amount of strikes, the bigger concussive blows is the one who gets the nod here. So, and I tend to think that's why I scored the second, third and fourth round for him is just like the big shots were landed for DDP. They were landing, they were doing more damage. They were backing Sean up. Sean's jab did seem to be hitting. It did seem to be effective. It just didn't seem to be as effective. Now, I will also say that when I scored the fight, I was terrified that Sean Strickland won round two. I thought DDP, you know, entered the fight down 2-0. I personally scored 2 for him, but I thought the optics of 2 possibly could have led to Sean Strickland. It was super close. And then come to find out at the end of it, that's not even the round Sal D'Amato gave to Sean Strickland.
Our boy Sal.
Yeah. Also, I will add too, remember I just drew the parallel to the Jared Cannonier loss, which was Sean Strickland's last loss. Do you know who scored it for Sean Strickland in the Jared Cannonier loss?
I'm sensing a
Sal D'Amato. Yeah. Yeah. So like
in his both of his last two losses, Sal D'Amato has tried to bail him out, which is kind of wonderful. I think the judges' scorecards were correct, but at the end of the day, if it read split decision going to Sean Strickland, I don't think DDP would have had any argument otherwise either. Like that was a super close fight. It was a super good fight. I enjoyed it. I like that Sean kind of let loose in the fifth to try to win it at the end. But unfortunately for him, like at that point in time, the fight was already decided unless he got a finish.
It's less funny now because DDP seems to be getting better. He's not like
he's the champ now.
it's harder. It's not like he's a women's bantamweight fighter. It's harder to it's harder to clown on him now because he doesn't do as many goofy things. He only whiffed on a couple of big shots a couple times.
His spinning backfist looked bad. His spinning backfist looked bad early. I will say that.
But usually he'll fall on his face trying to do something.
That's true.
That hasn't happened for a while.
He didn't do that. No, I'd say he looked good. Would I pick him to be Israel Adesanya? No, of course not. No, I wouldn't pick Sean Strickland to beat Israel Adesanya in a rematch either, though, to be fair. But like, if you look at middleweight sucks. It's not
good. Yes.
And like, apart from like these prospects who like need to grow up and save us mostly, you know, like Bo Nickel, please get better fast.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, Kaibohio, Joe Pfeiffer. Yeah. You know, like I have to say this. I actually think Michel Pajeda could beat most middleweights too. After watching what he did to Andre Petrosky, like, I don't think it would be that absurd to say, like, 2025 middleweight champ Alex Pajeda, or not Alex Pajeda, Michel Pajeda. Like, I think Michel Pajeda could run up this division if he needed to after what he did to Petrosky. So, like, I think these guys on the outskirts of the top 50 need to grow up quick because, like, either that or we're about to watch, like, DDP versus Brendan Allen for the title. And while Brendan Allen has been getting better and DDP has been getting better, like, God, do they just both not feel like UFC champions? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're just don't feel, it doesn't feel like you've got like a guy in the champion spot where you're like, going to take something to beat that guy. And it's like, it's just going to take a real division to beat that guy. That's what it's going to take, a real challenger in a division that seems like it's not made up.
There seems to be a future that we just have to hang on for. You didn't even mention the boogeyman who lives in Abu Dhabi now.
I mean, like,
if he can stop from almost dying constantly, then who knows, right?
Yeah, if I get 6 months without a Instagram post that he then has to delete because somebody made him about possibly retiring or his face being bad or a bad infection or whatever, like, if I get 6 months of that, I'll start talking about him as, like, a serious challenger. But, like, also, he, like, almost lost to Kamaru Usman. I'll just throw that out there.
So, you want to talk about Cameron Simon is going to be the next South African champion too.
He is not.
All right. You want to talk about what you're talking about off air? How you're glad that finally an African Africa has a champion?
You know very well. I didn't say that.
That wasn't you that said that.
I will say
no. That was the champion who said that. That's right.
I do have to backtrack just a little bit too because he did an interview because I think I clowned on DDP for saying that and was like, dude, like, read the room, right? And he clarified in an interview with Brendan Allen that he never meant that to be like incendiary, and he was just trying to, like, he was like, I'm just gonna be the first guy who like sleeps with it on African soil for not a vacation. And he was like, I was trying to make that like a positive thing, and everybody took it the wrong way. So like, he actually in an interview with Brendan Fitzgerald, which, like, if you're doing an interview with Brendan Fitzgerald, I feel like you're being fairly honest. Like he did try to clear that up and say that he wasn't trying to like shit talk Israel Adesanya.
There is no nice things to be put out on the internet. The internet's going to wreck everything. So
no, they like,
know that.
They like bad
champions. Exactly. Especially if you're going to be a champion. And if you're a white guy from of all countries, South Africa, of all the African countries, South Africa, you probably should be careful what you're saying if it could be construed as being racist. So that was our fight of the night. Kind of surprising. I figured it was either going to be Duplessis, via knockout, or Strickland was going to, like, wear him out over five rounds, but you know, it was a slobber knocker of a slugfest. So, doesn't really matter what's next for Strickland. Strickland basically just goes back to where he was before he became champion. Basically,
I'm going to give you a hot take. I would really like to see, and it's probably not going to happen because Strickland likes to stay active. I would really like to see him against Khamzat.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Because, and I can't believe I'm about to say this. I think Sean Strickland beats Khamzat. I was just talking about all those people who I think beat DDP and could beat Sean Strickland and stuff like that. I don't think Khamzat's one of them that can beat Strickland because that pace that wasn't enough to take DDP out, I think is enough to take Khamzat out. And we also just saw one of maybe the most impressive things about Sean Strickland in this, and I would like to praise him because he did put together a great fight, is his ability to get up from the takedowns. You know, DDP is an excellent grappler, particularly positionally grappling, and he got him down a bunch of times, and he didn't hold him there very long at all. Props to him for getting up so quick. And if he can do that against DDP, Khamzat might be a touch better, but that is an interesting puzzle that Khamzat would have to crack.
And DDP is a big boy. He's bigger than Khamzat for sure. He somehow gets to it. Strickland's the one who, like, you see him at weigh-in, boy, he gets so skinny for weigh-ins. He walks around at a pretty heavy weight, it looks like, once he gets in the cage. So he got a pretty bad cut last night. And speaking of cut, Gumby, hey. Here we go. Hit it. I'll tell you about Kutt. KUTT Kutt, though. Kutt is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's US-based and available in 40 states. Peer-to-peer social betting is a new and better way to bet directly against your friends or other users on sports, politics, pop culture, and other events with verifiable outcomes. And it's tons of fun. Has tons of fun, excuse me, social features that give it the feel of a betting social network. Kutt offers lower vig and fully customizable odds. Create your own bets. Kutt handles the payment side of things, so you never have to chase anyone down for dollars. They have social features such as group chats, betting leaderboards, head-to-head history, user profiles, fan groups, and more. And you get your cash back every single time you bet against your friends or other users. That's rewards. So reminder that Kutt is the, I emphasize is again, the, I have to emphasize, Kutt is the, that would be bold and capital letters, peer-to-peer social betting platform that's US-based and legal in 40 states. Two things I am not. Head to Kutt.com, and that's K-U-T-T. That's the key. KUTT.com, and use promo code SGPN for a 10% deposit bonus. Hall of Fame bets. Win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NFL, NBA, and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay idea in the Hall of Fame bets revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark. Join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame bets. And you can put me back up in the camera because I am a walking billboard for the next podcast. SGPN merch store, 15% off everything in the store right now until the end of the month. Promo code playoffs. I got SGP hat on and just came in the mail last week.
Multiple regional championships on his
shirt. My family doesn't know what it means or because they don't listen, but how to explain to my son what it's all about. But yes, you can get that shirt and be cool like me. It makes you look really buff too. I look super swole in this shirt. People on YouTube are thinking, wow, does he ever look swole in that shirt? Gumby shaking his head. Yep, he does. We're competing against other shows too for a bonus. So you want us to win money, right? Of course you do. We're going to have a big party for episode 500 with all the money we win at Gumby's house. So come on. Get the shirt I'm wearing now. Get a hat. Get whatever. Just tell them MMA Gambling Podcast sent you. That's the SGPN merch store. It would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. All right. It only took us 26 minutes. We made it through the first fight, Gumby.
That's okay. Some of these fights we're not going to talk about very long. No.
Gumby is making an executive decision on the fly. All right. Speaking of YouTube, everyone who's listening, just go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You don't even have to watch us. Just subscribe. We need to get our subscriber numbers up. Hit that. Yeah, Gumby's pointing to the screen. And if you have multiple accounts like me, subscribe from every account. And then we can start making YouTube pay us because we're going to have ads and stuff. So like I said, if you're like me and you prefer to listen to your podcasts and not watch them, that is fine. But just subscribe and get everyone else to subscribe to us because were the best, right? Of course. Speaking of the best, Gumby, here's a transition for you. Women's bantamweight title fight. Toronto really got treated. Perhaps the two worst weight classes in the UFC championship fights.
Definitely
middleweight's a toss up. I know it could.
No, I think you got
light heavyweight's more fun now. Yeah.
Yeah. Light heavyweight's kind of fun now because they've got like young fun guns and then they have people at the top of the division who I actually think are good at fighting.
Yes.
Yeah. It's,
but women's bantamweight, there's no denying that it is the worst women's division, not just for star power, but usually for more often than not performances inside the cage. Get rid of it and give us Adam weight. But anyhow, Raquel Pennington is the new UFC champion. She beat Moira Bueno Silva unanimous decision, 49-46, 49-46, 49-45. I think it was your podcast, Gumba, you said that she's been around the UFC the longest before becoming champion. Is that right?
There's the longest, third longest. There's the third longest gap between when she made her debut and when she won her title. She's only the third person to have a 10-year gap in between those two dates. One of them is Robbie Lawler. And of course, he left the UFC in the middle of there. So I don't even know if you want to count that. And then there's Charles Oliveira and then her. Yeah. She actually had longer gap in between her debut and her title than Michael Bisping did, which is, I mean, that's nuts because it seemed like it took Bisping forever. And that's how long it took Rocky. So I will start this off by saying, look, I know the fight was a little bit of a dud. I want to put
it was more, expected.
It was expected. Myra Buena Silva told us this fight had sucked and nobody was excited for it. I want to lay a little bit more on that because I know there's some hate on Raquel Pennington's fight IQ that she kept going to the clinch. Oh, and,
yeah. The announcers, that was the narrative of the fight with our lovely UFC commentators. They pick a thread and then they stick to it.
But I will also say this by that. Like, she kept going into the clinch. And while Myra Buena Silva does like it in the clinch and did get the Holly Holm submission in the clinch, did she ever really threaten a good submission on Raquel Pennington? No. So like in Raquel Pennington's style over the course of her career, and don't get me wrong, she was doing great from range. I think people kind of sleep on how good her boxing looked last night too. Because when she was at range, she was really piecing up Myra Buena Silva. But also like her MO, her whole career has been to wear on people because she's bigger and stronger than a lot of women in that division. So like, and then at the end of the fight, Myra Buena Silva had no gas left. So, like, yes, did it seem dumb? Maybe that she was going to the clinch all the time because that's where Myra is dangerous. Sure, but then by the end of the fight, Myra Buena Silva couldn't even stand up. So, like, what she was doing was working. Maybe it didn't work as fast or as flashy as some of the other stuff, but my God, was it effective? She won 4 out of 5 rounds, and one judge gave her a 10-8. So here we are in the Rocky Pennington era. Much like the Machida era, I think perhaps they will last right around the same amount of time. I don't necessarily want to talk too much about what's next for her because I think we all know the sad and annoying answer. So we won't even say the words because they'll be said enough across different social media platforms and shows and stuff like that. But I want to ask you this question.
Shockwave all of a sudden. You're asking me questions.
How good does my Miesha Tate 50-1 ticket look?
Yeah,
right now?
It's looking better. It's looking better.
Fifty to one Miesha Tate end of 2024 champ. I think heavily in play right now.
Yeah, we can't expect the announcers to realize that Pennington worked out of the clinch because they never do research. It's obvious that they don't watch fights. Yeah. But that's how she fights every fight. That's why it's boring. She pushes a person against the cage and she grinds it out. That's anyone who's watched one of her fights knows that. So she
and some of her losses are she tried to do that and got turned around and lost most of the round. Like that's how she lost to Holly Holm. Like she tried to push Holly Holm against the cage for that all that time. And then Holly reversed enough positions that she was doing it. It was boring both ways, but like, yeah, that's kind of how Rocky fights.
Yep. Exactly. So congratulations to her. And then she gave like I said, she is the electrifying, Raquel Pennington. She gave an electrifying speech after the post-fight speech. So emotional.
You know what John Anik called her? I think I missed that. John Anik called her electrifying.
No. I'm just calling her that.
Oh,
it
sounded like an
he might have, but no.
Yeah, that sounds like something Johnny would say.
It's true. Maybe I'm trying to steal his job. She's real. She's dynamite on the mic, just like she is on the cage, right?
It almost seemed like she forgot to thank her wife and child. Did you catch that?
No, she mentioned Tisha Torres.
She did, but yeah. Like it was like, I just need to thank my coaches. And she rattled through a list. Yeah. And then she's like, I need to thank my training partners. And she rattled through a list. And she's like, I don't know, my wife and kids. And then that was it. Like, it was like, did you forget them? Or are they an afterthought? Like, did you just not want to pour it on too heavy? You know, like, but here we are talking about Rocky Pennington for more than 4 minutes. So
no emotion whatsoever, but don't worry. The person that she's fighting is going to next is going to make up for all of that. Is the person that she's fighting, has she always been this toxic and we just didn't pay attention to her before?
No, okay. One of my pandemic watching habits was me and my wife went back and watched old season of The Ultimate Fighter. And my wife was like, is this woman the most insufferable person who's been on this show? And that was like after she already met Junie Browning. And I was like, yeah, she's up there. She wrote like weird, cringy letters to people on the show. It was like she had like 6 catchphrases and they were all terrible. Oh, yeah, she was like bad from the get-go. Like I didn't enjoy her ever.
Fantastic. All right. We shall not mention her name. And we didn't. Welterweights. Here was the fight of the night for us. Our star, Neil Magny. Our +310. We both were in on Neil Magny +310, even though he's fighting a Canadian, an upcoming Canadian, who the announcers claim was undefeated despite him already having a loss and a draw on his record. But hey, we don't expect him to do research. No, it's Daniel Cormier. He's there for the LOLs, guys. Neil Magny, this never happens. He won the fight after being beaten for 2 rounds with 15 seconds left to go. This will forever give coaches who don't stop fights. This will be one of the fights that they'll look to and say, well, Neil Magny was getting destroyed and he ended up winning the fight, and they'll never stop a fight even though their fighter's getting destroyed. TKO punches 4:45 into the third round. Mike Mulott was tired. I was gonna say to you or in the Discord that he passed the test. Mike Mulott passed the test. He can move to the next phase. He did not pass the test. He got tired. He got taken down. He got a little tired and had a little nap while he got his face punched in by Neil Magny. So anyhow, I think everyone in the Discord was in on this pick with us because everyone was cheering. Neil Magny coming through +310.
The only one who wasn't was Jong. It messed up his parlays. Shout out to our favorite guy, Jong. He was Jong. a little quiet last night. I will say I was in this wonderful position where I had basically covered my Neil Magny bet by taking a look at my prop of the week was this fight goes to decision, which was almost as good as the Magny number. And then like it got towards the end and I'm like, well, only one of them can hit. So I guess hope for the 3-1 to hit. So it was like better that he finished it. But I was like, also like, this lasts another 15 seconds. I'm doing fine anyway, because the 2-1 is going to hit instead of the 3-1. But my God, you know, Mike Mulott, I wanted to believe that he was more than some guy with like flashy early finishes. And his wrestling did look good. I'll give him that. But like, only 2 rounds are there. And then he's that tired against Neil Magny. Like, yeah, it was not a good look for him. It was not a good look for any Canadian man. And this is the big run of us talking about them all doing very poorly. But like, it just seemed like if you have no answers when you're in the bottom like that, despite how tight, like he couldn't even pull him into guard and just hold guard for a second to try to regain his focus and composure. He just let Neil Magny pass through every single position right to mount and just beat the hell out of him. It was kind of really ugly for a guy who I think we pegged him as the best Canadian prospect when we were doing this show.
Yeah. Which isn't saying much at this point, sadly. I see he was born in Cleveland. So that explains I just saw that. He was born in Cleveland. So that explains. I do like Cleveland, but he's not a Canadian. So it was not good, Gumby. Not a good look. And he's what, 32 already. So
good for that. Dude. Yeah. Do you know who the last guy Do you know who the last guy he finished with strikes was?
I could look, but go ahead.
It's Craig White.
I don't even remember Craig White.
So. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So.
tell me one other thing about Craig White.
I mean, I know his fight with Neil Magny was in England.
Okay.
I think he's British. Yep. I want to say he's British. Okay. Yeah.
Doesn't really sound like a British name, but I'll accept it.
Okay.
Yeah. This that could be it for, not it for his career, but Malott's, like I said, he's 32. He doesn't have a heck of a lot of experience, so maybe, you know, he still has some room for growth, but that definitely was not. And it wasn't the typical can't get a beat on Magny. He had him figured out for two rounds. It was, you know, it was a Mike Malott problem. It wasn't a Magny problem.
Yeah. I will also say, I just looked up Craig White just so I could say more things about him. He is from England. He finished his career at 14-12. He never won again after Neil Magny finished him. He retired on five straight losses.
look out, Mike Malott. All right, let's move on to another Canadian male who lost. Of course, Gumby got this one right, though, which is sad for me to say. Chris Curtis came through a split decision. This was a block fight. I had this one picked as a fight of the night in the pick'em contest I run, but definitely wasn't fight of the night. 30-27, 28-29, 30-27. Interesting scorecards. I said in the Discord 30-27 is wrong, but with a close fight like this, there wasn't really any wrong scorecards.
Won any round in this fight?
Yeah. The story here is neither guy did enough to really have a claim that they definitely won this fight.
Well, and I think I said, and we'll keep it this simple, I said on the show on Thursday, is that, like, Marc-Andre Barrio is a guy who has weaponized cardio, and that's, like, that's been his MO. That's how he's gotten the wins he's gotten in the UFC, and he just happens to be fighting somebody who won't engage him in that kind of fight and will find a way to slow it down, because that's what Chris Curtis has been really good at, despite the fact that, like, we remember some of his big knockouts and he's called Action Man and stuff. He's really good at slowing it down and making it lame as hell, like he did with Rodolfo Vieira. And so, like, he fought this fight as smart as he possibly could. As boring as it was, this was the right way to fight Marc-Andre Barrio, especially as he protects his ranking at middleweight, which, like, you know, you watch that fight and you're like, oh yeah, that's the 13th best middleweight in the UFC.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Like, I think he fought so smart. So, yeah, not a lot to say about the fight, but good for Chris Curtis, 'cause he's a good dude too.
But in the opener, I got it right. Gumby got it wrong. Hooray. Mofsar Ivoyev is how they were saying it on the podcast. Ivoyev took care of Arnold Allen. Allen came alive at the very, very end of the fight, which is a little too late, bud. 29-28 across the board. Ivoyev, biggest win of his career, and he remains undefeated.
Yeah, and did you see what Dana White said about him?
What did he say about him?
He said it was the worst fight he's ever seen, or like one of the most boring fights he's ever
seen.
He's
walked out of fights before, so no, it wasn't. It was even worse fight of the night.
Yeah, the one right after it was worse. I will say, though, yeah, I'm pretty sure, and you can usually guess Dana White's line of thinking, is he was like, Ivoyev in his post-fight interview, I know you don't usually watch those, so I'll fill you in here.
No, I didn't.
Said he's pretty sure he's definitely next for Volkanovski versus Topuria. He's got to be the unquestionable number one challenger right now for the belt. And I think this is just Dana White's way of saying, hell no, dude, it's not fun to watch you fight. No. Like, you're going to have to fight somebody and, like, actually fight him. Because, like, you know, I definitely see how Ivoyev won the fight, but it wasn't going to surprise me if Arnold Allen stole judges' scorecards there, because let's face it, like, he would land a couple of punches, a handful of punches, and then they would be in these grappling exchanges where, like, Ivoyev had position, but, like, would you call what he did effective most of the time? I think based on, like, bulk approach and how long he had control, you can't overlook it. But, like, if you're looking for damage or close to submissions or anything like that, like, he really wasn't ever in on anything, right? Like, nothing was close to finishing that fight for Ivoyev. So, you know, like, I think he probably did win, again, like I said, just by, like, bulk of time that he had control of and the amount of control, the way he had control and things like that. But, you know, it really wasn't all that impressive of a performance. I feel like he's sort of incapable of having an impressive performance. He's like, he's like the least devastating fighter I've ever seen in my life. You know what I mean? Like,
I get it. I get it.
There's nothing. He's just a big wet blanket.
Okay, gross. Nothing grosser than a wet blanket. I was gonna ask you what's next for him, but we don't care if we don't if we don't think he's any good. So
I think the real big answer here is that, like, what does the UFC need for a challenger? Because, like, I think if Volkanovski wins here, obviously Max Holloway's already booked, and you know, then Topuria would be out of the way. I think you got some fun fights with Yair Rodriguez versus Ortega coming up, and then you got Aljamain Sterling and Calvin Kattar coming up. I think the most interesting of those fighters will wind up getting the next title shot. You know, like if Aljo comes out and just, you know, finishes Calvin Kattar in 2 seconds, like that'd be him. Or, you know, if Ortega somehow pulls off the upset and beats him, like you could do that rematch with Volkanovski, like a second Ortega fight. But I think whatever winner comes out of those two fights that isn't fighting for the title next gets a Volkov.
All right. That is the main card. I hit three. Gummy hit three as well. All right, let's start motoring because my battery's down to 38% because Jeff's been going off on tangents. All right, the prelims. Jeff's choking also. Bantamweight fight. Helen, prelims, we got it right because we went against a Canadian male. Garrett Armfield beat Bracatona, but did he beat him?
Yes.
29-28 across the board. Very close fight. I think at this point I was behind, so I was kind of watching. I was watching pay-per-view plus this at the same time, so I wasn't really paying attention enough to score. But Armfield won for us +165, and he was our dog of the week as well.
Yeah, the only people on MMA Decisions who scored this for Katona were my good guys at Sherdog. Which is, I mean, it's a joke that just keeps working. I will say this too, like, Katona got pieced up in the first two rounds. I think the first two were clearly Armfield's. I could see you scoring the third for Katona. He had enough control in that round that you could definitely give him round three. And he does enough when he's on top of control. He also landed a hook or two in that round. So I had first two. And it looked like the judges all had that too, right? Because it was 29-28 across the board. But wait,
yeah.
There's more. Sal D'Amato somehow gave Armfield the third, but Katona the first. Because even when he turns in the right scorecard, he turns in the wrong scorecard.
That makes sense, yes.
So, like, good for Armfield. Nice dog win. If you actually weighed in, because that was our dog of the week for both of us, which we both hit. If you actually weighed in after we talked about it on Wednesday and Thursday to, like, Friday morning, it got all the way up into the 190s for Armfield. So you probably could have gotten a pretty nice number there.
There you go. And we told everybody to get on it. So there you go. Featherweight, Sean Woodson. This was disappointing. Charles Jourdain didn't get past Sean Woodson. He tried. One judge picked it for him 28-29. The other ones had it correctly.
Bruce Buffer also seemingly tried to.
Oh, did he screw that up? See, I was going through things fast at this point. So
he didn't screw it up, but the way, like, you know how Bruce.
Oh, Buffer, yeah, I did, like, hear this. Yes.
Yeah, he over enunciates the shit out of things. Because he says things like and tries to sound so fancy when he doesn't, his Sean sounded a lot like it started with a CH. And as a result, like, Charles Woodson started getting excited and, like, raised his hand.
Sean Woodson. Charles Woodson is a football player.
He didn't actually say Charles Woodson. I will give him that benefit. I went back and listened to it. He said Sean, but it was like, Sean. And I was like, yeah.
Do people actually like him?
Bruce Buffer? Some people really like Bruce Buffer.
Other than being white?
I think Joe Martinez is way better. He's the only one who says everybody's name correctly with their, like,
yes,
national spin. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a Spanish speaking person, he, like, you know, he rolls those R's and throws those tildes on there. And if you're Russian, he makes sure to get that pronunciation correct. Like, anytime I'm about to interview a fighter and I'm, like, not quite sure how to say their name, I go look and see if Joe Martinez has said their name before, because that's usually the best indicator of how it's actually said.
I would actually be good at that job, don't you think?
I'm very positive you would not.
In my mind, I am.
Do you know the Polish strawweight, Karolina?
Karolina Kowalkiewicz.
You still don't get it right.
Kowalkiewicz. Tomorrow. Just wait till tomorrow's episode. Octagon.
Yeah, we got some fun with the names. We got some fun names. Yeah.
So anyhow, it was disappointing that...
Sean Strickland's got long reach and he used it and his defense is getting better. There you go.
yeah, and he's a freak with a big head and a not big body. Yeah, he's built very interesting, to say the least. Ramon Tavares cheated, missed weight, came in 139.75, and then ended up cheating me out of a win and gave Gumby a win here. I'm salty about this. Gumby had Tavares plus 150, one of Gumby's big dogs of the week. 28-29, another split decision. 28-29, 29-28. A lot of people had Cide picked as winning, but like once again, the aesthetics of it, Cide was a bloody mess and was getting pieced up constantly in the fight. So I see why he did not win this fight, even though maybe he should have.
You know, and I this is the one I knew I was going to have to defend when I said at the beginning of the show, I think it won. And if you go on MMA decisions, I'm apparently on an island here because all of them said it. But I almost wonder if all of the media members who scored this for City were listening to, and I know you weren't, but like were listening to the announcers, because the announcers ended that second round and were like, unquestionably, Sergey City won that round. And I was like, he got dropped twice in that round. He like hit the deck two different times in the second round, and unquestionably lost the first round. I was like, in my mind, he was down 2-0, and I thought it was obvious. And then I started looking on, you know, like Twitter, or I looked in the Discord, and people had City winning the second one, and I was like, guys, he got dropped twice. You know, like he and go back and watch it. I want to say it's 2 minutes into that round. He gets hit with a 1-2 combination. His butt hits the mat. Later, he tries to throw a leg kick and is still like wobbly enough to the fact where he falls down again. Like he was beat up in the beginning of that round. And then he like landed some body shots late, but I don't think that overtakes like getting floored 1.5 times.
Yeah.
So like I had it first two rounds, and it apparently two of the judges did as well. So I'll take that, and I'll take my dog money to the bank here because somebody had Ramon Tavares.
You sure did. You sure did. And at the end of the fight, you would most definitely want to beat Tavares in that city, by the looks of their faces. Opener of the prelims. We got it wrong. Jillian Robertson looked good, Gumby. Maybe she looked great. She didn't look quite as bad on the feet as normal, and she just smothered Pollyanna Viana on the ground before. And it wasn't just submission. She ended up TKOing her with punches. She was pretty vicious.
It was the first non-submission of the whole card was Jillian Robertson.
Yeah, yeah, go figure. Yeah, she looked really good. Yeah, disappointing for Viana. All right, here's a question. Viana wore like a rash guard. Is that a good idea if you're fighting someone who wants to grapple you? I was thinking that when the fight started. Doesn't that make you easier to control?
Tends not to be. I wear, when I grapple, I wear spats, not for like antimicrobial purposes or anything like that, or because I'm chilly. It's because literally Eddie Bravo told me one time that I should wear spats more often if I like rubber guard and shit like that. It'll give me better grip. And I like just, you know, like he's a guy who, at least his opinions on grappling seem to be mostly correct. So, the shape of the earth,
alien stuff
and in the alien stuff. Yeah, maybe different. But, so I've always just sort of gone with the belief that like, yeah, having more fabric on you, especially as the fight goes on, makes you easier to grab. It seemed like a bad choice here, but then again, like, I don't know. Some of that has to do with like the way they warm up and the way they sweat and, you know, like how they like to fight. So like, I think a lot of it is like a taste and comfort issue, but yeah, I would say you want more skin showing when you're fighting somebody who you need to get out of shit from. Yeah. And
not that it would have made a difference. It's just
no, because their takedown defense is some of the worst I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. And not that I want to see Pollyanna again. It's that stupid tattoo with like the face or whatever it is on her chest. Not that I would see that, but yeah, this was the first, four fights of the night was the bad textbook bad grappling fights of the night.
Correct.
Not Viana did. She survived, which is, you know, something to say, but yeah, got herself taken down and didn't get back up. So she was the least of the offenders here, but she didn't do so hot. And maybe Robertson's good. She's still young. Like it's not like she's around forever, but she's not old.
Yeah. And she's got Dean. So
yeah,
you have to imagine stuff's getting better.
Yeah. Well, she definitely got better there. So that was the regular prelims, early prelims. Sam Patterson, disappointing, Gumby. I'm not disappointed in her pick, I'm disappointed in Johan Lyon, I say, who got himself submitted a rear naked choke. Really good, really good bad grappling here. At this point in the night, I was firing a lot of people. Lyon, I say, I'm pretty sure it's going to get cut after this because he's lost 2 of 3 and did not do very good here.
3 of 4, I believe, right? He's lost 3 of 4.
I thought he only had three fights, but maybe you could be right.
Yeah, but whatever it is, it's not good, and he's not young either, which I think probably doesn't help. But like, how are you gonna? He was doing fine striking, and they even mentioned like, this is one of the few times I'm gonna pat myself slash the commentary team on the back at the same time. Is they were like, he keeps just leaning to do defense. Sam Patterson did, and he got knocked out last time, and then freaking Linace hit him, and I was like, oh yeah, here it comes, tall guy defense coming back. And then Johan Linace was like, let me shoot a double leg.
Yeah,
at least he's doing, man.
he didn't jump a Gilly, but yeah, you were correct, as you always are, 1-3. So yeah, he's not good.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's over for him. That's upsetting for him, but like, yeah, you're going to make decisions like that against Patterson. And Patterson got into the UFC with a rear naked choke. You know, like, we know he had wrestling. We just didn't think it would, or we knew he had jiu-jitsu. We just didn't think it'd ever get there, because why wouldn't Linace ever enter into a clinch? And like, it's not like Patterson's got like sick takedowns, you know?
And it was rear naked choke. I don't think I said that. Submission rear naked choke, 2 or 3 into the first round. Jasmine Jesuda-Vicia, she came through for the hometown crowd. Priscilla Cachoeira made this fight go up to bantamweight, and Jasmine was not happy about that and battered Priscilla Cachoeira, steamrolled her as she's done basically to all of her UFC opponents, save for Jong's girlfriend, Tracy Cortez, and ended up submitting her anaconda choke, 4-21 in the third round, and now Cachoeira is getting fired too now after all of that.
I assume so. I will say the only bummer of this to me was that the ref didn't let violence happen for just a little bit longer and ignore that tap so that I could get the 10 seconds to the Jazz Divisius decision that I was really pulling for.
Yeah. Jasmine, yeah, she's always going to be she
looks good. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. She's always going to be at an athletic disadvantage, and she's not the youngest person out there, but she, you know, she, and what is she good at? I don't know. Aggression, I guess.
She's good at grappling. I really like her good control. She kept taking down and like controlling Miranda Maverick, which is like, you know, really impressive. Yeah, she really feels like this generation's, and I do mean this in like the nicest way possible, like this generation's like a more modern version of Roxanne Modafari. She doesn't blow you away with like athleticism. She's weirdly way stronger than you think she is. When she's on top of you, you're like, oh shit, her jiu-jitsu is really good. And then like occasionally when she's striking, you're like, what's she doing? And then it's like effective enough to do the things that she needs to. So like, and I don't know, do you see her as somebody when you're like talking about where she is now in her early 30s? Do you like peg her as a future champ? Probably not, but you're like, there's people in the top 10 she'll beat. And like, you know, that's kind of where Roxy was, outside of, you know, getting that weird Nico Montano title fight that she got, which, was, you know, bizarre as hell.
She should be the steamroller. Matt Favola should give the name to Jasmine, because that's basically what she does. She did that to Cachoeira at, I think, the last takedown. She just kind of ran her over.
Yeah.
Like tackled her and, finished the fight. So good for Jasmine. Like, had the crowd happy, because, the opening fight, Malcolm Gordon missed weight. First of all, two fights in a row, then got himself, after dominating, got himself submitted by the only way Jimmy Flick could win was having to go to the ground, and Gordon obliged and got submitted with arm triangle choke, 117 in the second round. Says he retired, but that's basically, you can't fire me, I quit type of thing from him.
I think so. I will just say, it feels like he tired himself out in the first round defending submission attempts, when he should have never been on the ground in the first place. Cause let me tell you something, when he was on the feet against Jimmy Flick, he had him wobbly. He piecing him up. He was doing exactly what we thought he would. And we were like, he just doesn't need to go to the ground. Then he got invited to the ground and went and had played defense the whole time. And then was so tired after doing it in the second round that when he tripped and fell down, he did not have the energy to stand his ass back up. Yeah. Real disappointing fight IQ performance from Malcolm Gordon. A real shame, because I thought I had a great beat on this fight. And I think in terms of actual fighter skill and fighters' abilities and what they can and can't do, great handicap. And then in terms of what they chose to do inexplicably, Just the worst possible handicap I could add.
Yep, it is true. So wasn't a totally bad night for Gumby's handicap. So he may have been mediocre overall when you just look at the number of fights he had correct. What were your 6-6, I think?
Six and six.
The epitome of mediocre, but he was up $217 almost because he hit all those dogs. I went 5-7, only lost $33 though on those because I had some dogs as well. So on the year, we're both at 48%, Gumby. We're deadlocked, but you're down 5%.
I'm ahead again.
Down 5%. I'm down 7%. So there you go.
I'm ahead again. Just you had that 1 week, just so you know.
Yep. I know. Our locks, Gordon and Lanese, crapped out because they are Canadian males. Armfield, we both had it as our dogs. That looked good. Maggie Malott decision almost came through via Gumby at +200.
I'll take it if Silva, I get Magny anyway.
Silva by decision almost came through me, technically. She almost won the fight via decision until she decided she was too tired to fight. So we missed on those. Underdogs were the name of the week. We were both now over on the year. We're both at 4-5 on our underdogs. I'm up $195. You're up $235. So underdogs are, that's going to be the thing. 2024 is going to be our thing. As for the bonus words in the real world, as I said, DDP Strickland were our fight of the night. Robertson, Jasmine, Jussou de Vicious, two Canadian females were our performance of the night. And no UFC coming up. Boo. We have no UFC this week, but don't worry. We got some, there's actually some really good fight cards coming up that we got you set for. UFC is back in the apex. Hooray. So it's going to be a stellar fight card. That means February the 3rd. Roman Dolizzi, Nazardine Imabov, Moicano Dober are the top two fights there. All right, we've talked enough and my laptop's gonna die soon, so we'll chat more in the Discord. Get in the Discord if you're not a knucklehead. Get in the Discord if you don't have, if your DNA isn't an abomination. Get in the Discord. firstgamblingpodcast.com/discord. Twitter, Gumby was bragging about us on Twitter last night at the SGPN MMA account because we hit a +310. You got to brag about having +310s. So check that account out. You can check him out at Gumby Vreeland. You can check me out at Jeff Fox Writer on there and on Instagram. You can check out my Substack. I haven't, people who entered my pick'em contest, I have not crunched the numbers yet for last night's event. I will do that very shortly, but I run a weekly pick'em for the UFC and a bunch of other fun articles on there. So get to moneymma.substack.com. Gummy's got the Top Turtle MMA podcast. This past week, he made someone retire. First, he made someone miss weight, and then retire. Malcolm Gordon. And I can't remember, who else did you interview?
Marc-Andre Barrio.
And he made the power bar, the surge productor, lose as well. So great job, Gumby. We should keep, I might actually keep a running track. No, I don't have time. I was going to track how you're guys, but no more stats. I don't have time for that. And yeah, Top Turtle is a good podcast. You should listen to it. And of course, you should go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You should go to the store, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store, so you can get swagged out like me. And you should go to the Patreon, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Patreon. We'll be back. Don't worry. We got some three good regional events coming up to cover over the next week. Tomorrow, Octagon, Wednesday? Wednesday we do a show, right? Wednesday, LFA, Thursday, I'm blanking. Thursday is what?
ONE FC, the biggest promotion in the world.
Wow. So, and these are our like highest viewed. Like 9 out of our top 10 highest viewed YouTube videos are regional ones. So that seems to be our thing.
You guys love us on YouTube. I don't know why.
Yeah. It, not so much the audio form that they don't kill audio numbers wise, but yeah, YouTube, they are a thing. So thank you everyone who watches it on YouTube. We'll be back tomorrow we're going to kick things off with Octagon for you. I got to see what nicknames I'm going to use before I get out of here. Oh, of course, I'm Jeff X Fox. And then the Brick, Gumby Vreeland, will be making the picks tomorrow when we are back in your ears and eyes. See ya.